Everybody, and welcome today to the Nutrition Network. And we have with us Frankie, who is actually from Pharmanord. He's going to be speaking on behalf of Pharmanord. And it's exciting because Pharmanord has recently joined the network as one of our sponsors. And just to remind everybody that we are a kind of not-for-profit organization, so we really do rely on our sponsors. So thank you for joining us.
No problem.
So tell me, Frankie, just a bit about you. How did you, what kind of person are you? What are you, a practitioner? Oh. Are you whatever?
Well, good morning, Kate. And you've started on my favorite topic, which is myself. So thank you for that. I am a registered nutritionist. So I'm registered with the AFN. I've did my bachelor's degree in food quality, safety, nutrition. So it sounds like a bit of a Frankenstein course, but really what that involved was a bit of a clinical nutrition, a little bit of manufacturing prowess, a bit of psychology as well thrown into the mix. So quite an interesting course.
Yes,
at the time.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Very, very
is that
hard.
Public health? Is that sort of a public health aim, that course, or not really?
Well, I think the aim really was to be to prepare people on the course for multiple different avenues of the food industry at the time. So I don't think it really had one major aim in its sights. But it turned out to be an advantage because there's a lot of things I draw from that in my current role as a senior nutritionist in Pharmanord. But so that was the bachelor's, and moved on to do my master's in human nutrition in Coleraine University. That was really the calling, and from then I became a registered nutritionist. So in terms of what practitioner I am, I have been usually the clients I would have focused on in the past would have been for body composition, weight management, that type of thing. And I got really interested into the psychology of food choice as well. So the relationship of one's diets, because that's certainly an area where, there's a lot of growth in. I ended up getting my dream job as a senior nutritionist at Pharmanord because I was an evidence-based supplement company. I've always been obsessed with the kind of the science of supplements, I like to say, and the appropriate use of supplementation in practice.
Yes, because we are the sort of nutritionists who do use nutritional therapists are the sort of we do use supplements and we do think it's important. But obviously, all things are not created equal. So I'd like to hear about that in a minute, about this evidence base. But what was your, Frankie, just before we leave this, your favorite topic of you, how did you get into what the weight loss and the psychology of weight loss, was it from a personal perspective, but what was that sort of light that went on that made you want to look into it further?
I would say primarily in Northern Ireland I used to work a lot with personal trainers because they would have sought out the guidance of a nutritional therapist or practitioner, so it kind of became something I got used to and familiar with. But then what I identified later on is that the people's clients, like the personal trainer's clients, they had really troubled relationships with their diet and started assigning morality to their food. You know, this food is bad, this food is good, and it became quite problematic. So I think it was just exposure to the demographic. There was a lot of people who wanted that kind of body composition angle.
Does that come from? Does it come from the sort of societal pressures to look good in terms of that weight loss thing, and then obviously then the messages which can so often be wrong about what is good food and what is so-called bad food? So do you think that's where the pressure has come, or from somewhere else?
No, I do think that's pretty much the nail on the head there, Kate. I mean, obviously there's different reasons for body composition, and you get the occasional athletes that really benefit from certain supplements and certain regimes. Primarily it tended to be kind of aesthetics, if you will, and self-esteem. So I guess it's
Can get into obviously that control factor. I mean, especially with athletes who are really hyper controlling what they're eating in terms of getting a particular result. So it's not about them sitting around a table and having couple of glasses of vino and enjoying themselves. Food becomes really a way to a means to an end.
Yeah, very much so. And even like a minor improvement in their athletic performance would be something that would be drawn to from a really from an athlete who's really serious about their sports. So I find it quite fascinating, and you know, any sports nutritionist listening will understand this. But when we go for evidence, we tend to go for statistically significant results. But in sports nutrition, even a result that isn't statistically significant would still be considered in certain parts of regimes. So I find that quite fascinating as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's interesting because it's the sort of one, you know, obviously enhancing drugs obviously are not permitted in sport for very good reason. But obviously, presumably, nutritional supplements. Are there any nutritional supplements that you can't use within, you know, sports nutrition that have an impact, you know, as in effect on testing? Or is it, you know, like actually you can really make a difference with nutrition, sports nutrition through supplementation, and actually there's no downsides?
Yeah, I mean, there, I think it really comes to the organization that you're a part of when it comes to being an athlete. Because yes, there is anti kind of doping tests, if you will, for particular supplements. So yeah, it just really, it's down to the organization that you're part of. It's always worthwhile checking that particular organization's criteria for
no something. Absolutely. I was just wondering if there's ones that, you know, actually generally is like, oh no, if you take this you're in doping, you know, suddenly you're getting in doping problems.
And I will always say, you know, I really, you know, in Pharmanord, I'm constantly recommending that people who are interested in supplementation, that we provide them a certificate of analysis so that they can check for themselves the levels of contaminants, and you know, depending on the nature of the supplement, like heavy metals or PCBs for fish oils. You can request this kind of information, certainly from us, and other manufacturers should be able to provide that as well. So that would help kind of connect the dots, I think.
That was a very nice segue into actually to our discussion today about Pharmanord. So you say you got your dream job with Pharmanord. So how long have you been at Pharmanord, and why Pharmanord for you?
Yeah, so 5.5 good years, but who's counting, you know? And the main draw from it was, well, I've always been obsessed with the science of supplements. And I don't know, certainly whenever I was going through education, supplementation had a bit of a strange reputation, didn't it? And I think that's felt by other practitioners, in that you'd have some people of the public who would say, oh, you know, supplements don't work. You know, all you need
expensive
is
expensive urine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've got that to compete with. But the idea that you can have solid, robust evidence base to support the supplementation that you are kind of representing, I suppose, was really appealing, because I do not like the idea of having to support something that I don't believe in. I think most of our listeners would agree you'd never support a dietary protocol that you haven't researched yourself, you haven't trained on, and you don't believe in. So that's why I was led to Pharmanord, because I believe in all of the ethos that goes behind it. And that was a really nice find.
So Pharmanord is actually so I know you're based in or at least the head office in Britain is based in Northumbria, at least an office. It looks beautiful. I sort of we had a Zoom call, and I was like, right, I'm moving to Northumbria. But I suppose that was on a bit of the spur of the moment. But is it actually a British company, or is it not a British company, or no, based somewhere else?
Sure. Yeah, it was founded in Denmark. So our primary HQ is in Denmark, and we have offices all around the world. The UK office has been around for a number of decades as well. But the company overall was founded in the early 80s, about 82, I believe. And it was founded by the president, who's still on the board today. So it's a kind of an independently owned company, which is also a very attractive property as well.
So is it a family owned business, or is it a sort of in effect, or just independent, i.e. you're not part of a big kind of umbrella group, which some supplements are, you know.
Certainly, you know, we're independent in the way that it's really run by a board with the founder in it. No giant umbrella corporations, which I think it's always a nice thing because you get to really know who's behind the company, don't you?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, obviously been going since the 80s, that's quite a while to be going. And so what would you say the sort of, you know, I suppose ethos of Pharmanord is? I mean, you know, is it, you know, go. So what's the sort of foundations that it sits on?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we've already touched on it, but it is the evidence-based angle. So why that is more, to kind of make that more tangible. A lot of our products, certainly all of our core products, are featured in clinical evidence, and it's clinical evidence that's often cited in articles relevant to the topic. So to actually have the products that are used in the clinical trials made available is, I think, is quite a nice feature. And that's also one of the reasons why we don't have the biggest range in the world. Like, we don't have a massive range of, say, phytonutrients. We have the main evidence-based fundamentals, vitamins, minerals, and vitamin-like substances like coenzyme Q10. So our bioquinone is our major product, for instance. We have a really bioavailable selenium yeast as well, called Seleno Precise. But I think it was the evidence-based principle is our major draw. But the other one is bioavailability. So, you know, pharmacies and any pharmacists, you know, absolutely know all about bioavailability. And the public is starting to kind of click onto it, the idea of kind of drawing back to what you said, Kate, earlier, expensive urine. So if that's a water-soluble nutrient, like a vitamin B2, for instance, yeah, it's perfectly fine. That's water-soluble, isn't it? But supplements need to be able to be shown to absorb into the digestive tracts. And into the bloodstream, into the lymph, and get to the site of activity. So that principle of bioavailability is something that follows every relevant product in Pharmanord, and we have evidence for that as well. So that is quite reassuring. And it's not something that everyone is super familiar with, the idea that, I suppose if we stop and think about it, it doesn't make sense, doesn't it? If it doesn't absorb, it's not going to work. So yeah, that's something that we account for in all of the supplements. The third principle, I would say, for Pharmanord is pharmaceutical standards. So when we hear Pharmanord, pharma is in reference to pharmaceutical quality, not anything else. It's to do with pretty much everything's made in the way that medicines would be made, put it that way. Yeah, so it's a very strict quality assurance and very strict label adherence. So putting them all together, I think, is a major identity, the Pharmanord, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting because I guess, you know, in a way, the general public, do they, because, you know, obviously we said, obviously you've got a practitioner support arm, which I'll chat about in a minute, but, yeah. You know, your nutrients are available in good health food stores, but do the public, do you think generally, I think you alluded to it, saying that they're getting a bit more familiar with it. But what makes them choose Pharmanord? You know, because for them, do they make that sort of leap of to say, okay, this is about quality, and actually, I'll choose Pharmanord over somebody else who's doing, you know, whatever coenzyme Q10. You know, what's their? Do you think that matters to the public?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, like, you know, I would be completely naive to say that the entire public is aware that your supplement needs to absorb for it to work. You make the assumption, don't you, that if you buy something, it's going to do what it says because, you know, you're able to purchase it. But I would say that, just to give an example, actually, in my master's degree, for my dissertation, I did something quite supplement focused, and that was it's very, very long-winded. The socioeconomic and psychological factors behind consumer choice of supplementation. So yeah, God, you know, just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? But the primary finding from that was actually, and it's so simple and straightforward, really, to say it out loud, why do we have to do a thesis for it, was the person who takes the supplement needs to feel or believe that it's going to work. That is the primary factor, that it's going to do whatever it says or whatever the reason is that they're going to take it. Now, the reason why someone would take a supplement needs to be appropriate, and that's where, you know, us as nutritionists can help to identify appropriate use of supplementation. But yeah, so basically people just need to know that it works, and part of that may be doing their own research. And doing their own research, it can be new articles, blogs, or hopefully getting in touch with their local NT to get a little bit more information. But it's the people are becoming more health conscious, and you know, it could be multiple reasons why that may be. But part of that is becoming better educated to be kind of more self-empowered with one's own health.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have seen that. I mean, yeah, I'm not in practice anymore. I do work in companies, but I definitely see that in companies, which is people that 20 years ago when I started just didn't have a clue about some basic parameters of good eating or good health. And now people are quite informed. So I guess that must play through into the supplement market as well, where they are looking for evidence of it working, you know, obviously working. There's no point in spending the money if it's not going to work. I mean, I think the thing is with supplements is that we sometimes can't measure the quick change. You know, it's I always say with supplements, it seems like you're walking up the hill and you arrive at the top, but also you walk down the hill when you stop taking them, meaning you don't have that usually that sudden like, oh my God, I was taking that supplement, I feel fantastic.
Yeah.
And now I feel rubbish, you know, if you stop taking them. So it's a sort of gradual process.
I definitely agree with you there, Kate. Well, I suppose it really does depend on the nature of the supplement, doesn't it? I think and certainly this applies to nutritional protocols as well, like dietary protocols. But if something is aiming to be preventative, it's not very exciting, is it, for the you know, the participants. If we're trying to reduce the risk of something, oftentimes it's not noticing any difference is a good thing, because you're trying to prevent some sort of some sort of activity, some sort of biomarker, etc. But ultimately, certain compounds and nutrients, and luckily a lot of the things we have some sort of therapeutic benefit as well, depending on the application. So usually there's a bit of a mix, and sometimes you will get, especially if it's the appropriate supplement for that particular client's needs, you'll find that they'll come back and say, hey, wow, you know, thanks for that, you know, thanks for this advice, that advice, and that really helps. So, you know, that's one of the draws I got from Farmnode as well, is getting that positive feedback, the kind of, okay, great. Yes. You know, the recommendation that was made to the practitioner was helpful. So the practitioner was able to have a nice client interaction. So that was good.
So obviously you've done quite a few studies. So one that's either sticks out, or have you focused in a particular area as Farmnode on the studies aspect?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few to go through. Wouldn't do it in the scope of this, because it's not one of the CPD webinars that we do. But it's I would say the major the two major studies. The first would be QSymbio, would be the kind of the trial name, and it's often referenced. But it was more of a heart failure trial, and it had about 440 approximately participants with heart failure. And it involved our
Heart failure is that's a biggie. I mean, that sort of sounds like it's sort of like end game kind of idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but that was kind of just one angle of the kind of heart supportive element that was explored in that. But no, really good results from that. So if anyone, you know, listening wants to read up, that's the one to go for.
So what were you giving as the intervention there?
So it was bioquinone.
So
bioquinone is our coenzyme Q10. And you know, if anyone listening is familiar with Farmanord, that's usually synonymous with Farmanord is the bioquinone. But that was the intervention, 300 milligrams. And the results are quite great. There was that one. The other one that we reference is the KYSEL-10 trial. So that also involved QSymbio. But also SelenoPrecise. So SelenoPrecise is basically an organic selenium product, very high bioavailability and safety. Anytime we are thinking about supplementing the selenium, it is important to consider like the safety aspect, because you know it can be something that you get too much of a good thing. with the inorganic seleniums. So with the organic selenium, there was an EFSA documentation stating its safety, certainly to a higher threshold with the than the other selenium types. So I mean, it was paired with the bioquinone, and that was a trial done in Sweden. And it was more to do with longevity and your kind of quality of life as one gets older. And again, really, really strong results in that one too. So I think those are our two major ones, but we're often picked up in other clinical trials. Some of them not our own, just because of the kind of the documentation that goes into the products.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I think these days as well, I mean, people obviously, you know, they are more interested in the kind of proof aspect of these things rather than just, you know, like, oh, yeah, that looks like a pretty packet. I like that kind of, you know, bucket with your, you know, what do you call it? Pesta and mortar, isn't it?
That's the one, mortar and pestle.
Yeah, pesta and mortar. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's not a bucket with a spade hanging out of it, obviously, no.
I've heard that one before, though.
No, but it's obviously reference to how in the old days we used to prepare our medicines through that.
Yes, but,
I would imagine.
The apothecaries.
Yes.
The good old days.
Yes, absolutely, the good old days. Well, what was I going to say? So we've talked a little bit about the products you're best known for, but so that would be your bioquinone.
Yeah.
I hope I said that right. And what was the other ones, just to reiterate for us?
Yeah, no problem. So it's a Seleno Precise. So it's
yes.
The bioavailability of that was about 88 or 89%. Not fantastic with numbers. But that is the highest recorded bioavailability for a selenium supplement. So that was a... That one's pretty effective for raising your serum selenium levels. Selenium is a bit of an interesting topic because it tends to be, so I'm from Northern Ireland, right? There's a lot of farmers in Northern Ireland. And if you're to talk to any farmers about selenium, they tend to become, they're very knowledgeable on the topic very, very suddenly, simply because it tends to affect crops, right? It affects, a lack of selenium can affect our crops or livestock, et cetera. But obviously that impacts us, whether we're vegetarian, vegan, omnivorous, no matter what, that lack of selenium that we tend to have in the UK and Europe tends to affect us. So anyone?
Yeah, and everybody's a bit nervous, as you so rightly alluded to early. As I say, I'm a bit rusty on my clinical legs, but wasn't it? 100 micrograms, I don't know, where the toxic dose can really kick in quite quickly. So
of the
inorganic. So actually, this is interesting information because, you know, in a kind of ignorant way, as I say, you'll be relieved to know I haven't been practicing for a while. So it's not like I'm it's like, what? You didn't know that? No, I did know that. Obviously, people are very careful of it. But I hadn't kind of clocked the difference between this organic and inorganic forms, which I suppose is the metal form. I mean, it's the actual metal form of the nutrient. So what is the inorganic form?
Sure. Yeah. So the inorganic is, you're right, the metal tends to be selenite or selenate, for instance. And what normally happens in nature is that plants will uptake this selenium and convert it into L-selenomethionine. And that may be something that some practitioners are familiar with, L-selenomets, or whatever way you want to call it. The animals have a tendency to convert that into L-selenocysteine. So we just have two major selenium-based amino acids. And then from there, then we can incorporate that into selenium proteins in the body. That's the major kind of endpoint where they do helpful things. Glutathione peroxidase, for instance, is a very well-known senoprotein, and there's a few others as well with roles in the body. So the benefit of using the yeast, like the brewer's yeast that we do, is that it's able to incorporate that inorganic selenium into both amino acids. So you got the senomets and the senocysteine, which means you got a broad spectrum of senoproteins being produced in the endpoints. The other advantage is that you can kind of just pasteurize the yeast when you're done. So it's not live yeast anymore. It's not contributing to anything like Candida albicans, which is a common concern. So that is the way we arrange the kind of organic type.
So if you're taking a supplement with selenium in it already, there isn't a danger of overdoing it with adding this, which may not be bioavailable, obviously, from the multi, there wouldn't be a caution of then taking a something, your selenium in effect, your bioavailable selenium.
I mean, not by itself, but I suppose it's always a case-by-case basis with our clients. You know, we've got to factor in what selenium we're likely to get from the diet, albeit not very much. And then in the case of like a multivitamin, if it is or inorganic, the bioavailability is likely to be around 50% is the last kind of figure I have in my memory. Whereas, you know, that whatever selenium that's supposed to be giving, you can really only account for half. But the EFSA document on the SenoPrecise gives much more information on that, but it's unlikely to be a consideration for most people, but it's still a consideration that should be made with anything we do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, I did hear actually, so even through Brazil nuts of eating, actually, because, you know, that's the famous, isn't it? Of, you know, everybody downs your Brazil nuts, but actually they're quite high in selenium. So you only need to be eating, you know, Brazil nuts a great big thing, you know, but you only need to be eating like five of those a day and take yourself over the limit.
Yeah, and it also really depends on where they're from. So another figure I remember from the Brazil nuts, again, not really not great with numbers, but the variance of the selenium that you can have in Brazil nut is massive because their capacity to have high selenium is massive. But it also depends on the selenium that the uptake in, from the soil and, you know, the kind of localized food cycle. So, yeah, it could be a lot or it could be not enough. You know, it's difficult to get that, you know, stable level.
So I've heard that New Zealand is particularly poor for selenium levels in the soil. Have you heard that? I mean, is it just like we're all poor all over the world?
Yeah, great point to mention. No, not every area is poor. Some are very high, actually. Certain parts of China are very high and certain parts are very low. Japan's very high. Greenland, certain parts of the UK, or sorry, certain parts of the USA. Are also quite high. So I think the main theory behind it all is Pangaea, the kind of the one continent theory, is that the selenium was naturally distributed in certain pockets. And then as the continents kind of expanded, it just resulted in certain areas around the world having more than the others.
And so, I mean, this is a dumb question, but where does the selenium come from? It's just the distribution of rock minerals in this. Is that really it? So it depends on the base kind of rock geology as to if you're lucky enough to get selenium in your diet. But also presumably, since we're all eating products globally now, so we're not eating products locally. I mean, I am, but I mean, I'm sure lots of NTs are, but lots of people won't be eating locally. So
it's in theory it should be a bit of a mix, but the figures from the 2018, which I think is the latest one we have, but you know, please correct me if that's not the case, but the National Diet and Nutrition Survey would suggest that we're quite low in selenium. So a lot of men and women aren't receiving the LRNI for it. So we have, and that's just through the dietary choice, and of course the nutrition and diet survey doesn't really analyze the dietary intakes for actual contents of selenium, you know. So it's a bit of a vague one, but it appears we're not really getting enough in the UK, at least.
So, you know, we're seeing, I mean, I think in practice, I hear through loads of other people that we're seeing quite a lot of thyroid problems. And of course, iodine is the other big thing that I'm a huge, huge fan of. Through you know, usually through kelp or some other means. Like I'm a big fan of iodine, but obviously selenium is that partnership with the thyroid. Are you seeing that in sort of your what you're hearing, that there's an uptick in that?
So like, part of kind of major part of my role right now is to support practitioners. So as part of that, practitioners can ask me any questions, or me and my team, excuse me. So, you know, we see questions day in, day out of, you know, common kind of questions. And there is quite a few regarding thyroid function and selenium. The thing I would say about selenium is that it does contribute to the normal thyroid function. So that's one of its approved claims. So, you know, we can kind of carry that with us. And yeah, most people do think about iodine right away when it comes to the thyroid. And yeah, we use iodine primarily for the production and the use of the TRT or TR and T3, T4 hormones, excuse me. But selenium is used in a couple of different other ways in the thyroid glands. I touched on that one of the selenium proteins it's involved in is glutathione peroxidase. That is something that neutralizes free radicals, as we know. Our thyroid gland produces a hell of a lot of free radicals in the way that it partakes in its function. So the thyroid gland is a very, very greedy hormone or greedy gland for selenium in the body. It tends to uptake and retain most of our selenium. So yeah, when it comes to the thyroid function, long story short, selenium is something to consider or look into because it's important for its regular function.
Well, I think that's interesting, is it? Because there's all of these key, I mean, obviously, there are loads of key nutrients of which we're just talking about selenium, but it's interesting that sort of particularly thyroid health go with kind of female hormone health and especially breast health. So, you're talking about the thyroid being a greedy, I like that, a greedy fella.
Very much so.
But, it's interesting that, obviously it's used like very important in breast health. So I'm wondering, if the thyroid is really a little, or under functioning, how it might impact the health of the breast if all the sort of resources are being up. I mean, it's just a sort of kind of an observation, really, rather than something I'm expecting you to answer. But
fair enough. I mean, the first port of call usually for us is to consider, is a supplementation, first of all, is it appropriate? So, as you've mentioned, there's lots of other nutrients in the mix. But also, what are the approved claims that we can go on to? So that kind of collects the EFSA panel's major trials. So we can go on to the EFSA document and get those, first of all. And I don't think breast tissue is involved in that. But then, of course, we go beyond that and we look at the kind of external evidence. I'm not familiar with anything to do with breast tissue, I must admit. So
well, it's obviously involved in cancer. I mean, selenium, I would think. So, I mean, I'm just sort of putting two and two together, really, which is obviously a major problem. And every other person seems, woman is breast cancer. So I'm just thinking, oh, that's interesting. So if it's kind of using up all the resources, then of course you haven't got the protect. I mean, I know it's not sort of sitting in little pockets around the body, but it's kind of like making it harder in effect for nutrients to be available elsewhere where it's needed, perhaps. I mean, just an observation really then.
I would say as well that when it comes to antioxidants, oncologists, if you're to ask an oncologist, what's your opinion on an antioxidant, they'll have mixed opinions. So I would say, inconclusive.
Inconclusive, yes. Well, let's leave it there, which is like, I'm just going, rather than knowing anything particular about that. If anybody's got any comments or suggestions, they can ring Frankie up and have a chat about it, for sure. So tell me, what about your practitioner support? So you're available by appointment, Frankie, or by just pick up the phone and give Frankie a call?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it depends on the urgency of the question. If it's something, typically we have an email address. It's pro@farmanor.co.uk. Yeah. You can use that for anything to do if you're a practitioner. So it can be, I want to set up an account. I want to get some research papers. I want to have access to your education activities. I want to, sign up to a seminar. But if you've got a question regarding a protocol or something that you're working on and you're thinking about introducing something that's within our range, or even if it's not, and you're considering getting some information on some sort of research around the topic, that's the email to go for. But if something's quite, oh, crikey, I need an answer right away, pick up the phone. Absolutely, ask me by name or someone in my team. So we have a little team of nutritionists here, which is lovely to see. So we'll be able to help.
Fantastic. And Frankie, what was I going to say? So your well-known product we've talked about, and and the selenium product. But what are the other sort of key products that you've got? Because you said it's quite a small range, but you know what you've done is focused on quality. From what I hear, you focus on the evidence. From what I hear, so you're not in the business, in effect, of producing masses of nutrients that you can't really back up what you're kind of claiming from it, or what the evidence proves. So what other key supplements would you, or what's your favorite? So
great question. I would say as well, I did come from a background of I worked in a company that had a massive range of supplements. And what I noticed being in that environment, just with the public, is that there tends to be a lot of response to trends, right? You know, we've all encountered, I'm sure, some questions about, you know, green coffee, raspberry ketones. The list really does go on, doesn't it? And certainly being in a kind of age of influencers, we're only encountering more and more of that. So I'm sure everyone listening has had someone say to them, hey, what about, you know, X, Y, Z? And you kind of shudder in disbelief that these things are being recommended. So that's one of the nicer things about, you know, our range, is that everything there is not a fad. You know, it's been time to kind of ruminate, gather the evidence and go, okay, this should be part of the family. I would say one of the other supplements that we are really well known for, we've got the bioquinone. So that's the coenzyme Q10 with the really high bioavailability and over 100 trials at this point on it. The SenoPrecise, again, high bioavailability, and you know, that's very popular too. The omega-7 product is something we're really well known for too. That is SPA 24, little orange and white box. That is it's got a rich source of beta-carotene in it, cisfexanic acids, if anyone's interested in being a nutrition nerd today. But its primary areas of research are vaginal atrophy and tear osmolarity, so dry eyes, really. So it's a very popular product and really good feedback from the end user. And very, very quick feedback as well, relatively compared to other supplements. So that's
yes, because as we were saying, you know, it's that going up the hill and going down the hill, so sometimes you don't get that. So what's that product called again, sorry?
So omega-7.
Just as it sounds. Very interesting, because actually a while back I went to the optician, they said you've got dry eyes. I was like, what? Anyway, I did start taking more essential fatty acids, but contact lens wearers like myself, you know, you do tend to get pretty dry eyes. So I'm writing that one down, Frankie. Kind of like, hold on, there'll be a little delay. Before I forget.
And as with everything, you know, it's all multifactorial. You know, that's part of our job, is to identify all of these different lifestyle factors and dietary factors that could be influencing the ailments, but that tends to be something that is a great kind of, oh, I'm noticing something already, you know?
Yeah.
You get that, that nice feedback. We have a BioMarine Plus is another great product of ours. So BioMarine Plus. It is.
And what's that about?
It's basically it's a fish oil.
Yeah.
But it's in a free fatty acid form. So it means that anyone with impaired digestive capabilities when it comes to fats, lack of lipase, for instance, or, you know, gallbladder removal sometimes could be something to consider. Whatever the case may be, this improved form in terms of how digestible it is very advantageous for bioavailability. So
yes, and so, you know, because a big worry in fish oils, of course, is the production. So, you know, so you obviously are producing it so that you can tell that there's no contaminants in the fish oils.
Absolutely right. Yeah. So it's not a common question we get from practitioners is that, you know, do you use any hexane solvents or anything to purify it? And no, that's absolutely not part of it. It's screening. So the batches are screened on a regular basis as if they were medicines. And that's why I would always say that if you're really, really set on having transparent information on the product in your hands, you can always ask for a certificate of analysis, and you can get that. And as part of that, you'll see the different screening that we do, including heavy metals.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it is, I mean, you know, not in our, within our network, obviously, because we tend to be practitioner, you know, quality supplements. But, you know, I should think it's a real wild west out there, you know, do you know what I mean?
Because And
to your point, I think, which is, you know, people see claims of stuff, you know, like, oh, I don't know, whatever it might be, like, oh, it's the next trend, you know, and so, you know, rushing out, you know, like there's a well-known, isn't there, health food store that stocks stuff of variable quality. Obviously, they have some good brands as well, but it's sort of like, you know, fillers and all of those things that we worry about in supplements. Mm.
Yeah, and did you know, I didn't know this initially until some time when I started working in kind of the regulatory aspects, but it isn't a legal requirement in the UK for food supplements to prove bioavailability.
It's interesting because I suppose what they're proving is that it's got it in the product. I mean, if they have to prove that, presumably they do have to prove that. But I would think even that because it's such a big market, you know, the regulators can't get to everybody just to see, like, you know, hang on a minute, we're just going to test if you've got that amount of zinc you say you have in the supplement.
That might be it. But well, if it's food grade, which tends to be like the food supplements, which is the predominant area, I think the variance for the actual quantity is quite wide. For pharmaceutical control and standards, it tends to be around 5% of the label claim. So if something is 100 milligrams, it has to be either 95 or 105 to fulfill that requirement, where it could be much broader with others. But
And obviously, if then you're taking that kind of dose, so to speak, and it's not working, it's flipping waste of money, isn't it? So there you go. So what else was I going to say? I was just, you know, on this last 2 years, I mean, you talk about having a base range, which actually isn't, you're not really catering to the sort of trend that market. But have you seen any sort of like upticks in what people are worried about out there in the public in these last 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly a couple of patterns that was hard to ignore, really. It was really around immunity products, you know. Prior to, you know, the pandemic, we would have found that wintertime, people really increased their intake of certain you know, nutrients and products, whereas now that tends to be all of the time. And certainly when everything began, it was very difficult to, you know, to retain adequate stock, if you will, because of this. All of a sudden, everyone really was seeking.
So people were more interested in supplements in this period, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly anything that would be associated with, you know, the normal functioning of the immune system. So selenium, zinc, vitamin D, vitamin C, glucans as well, beta glucans. I think I've got the major ones there. They were the major ones that seemed to have kind of went up just in terms of patterns.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, do you see that sort of slackening off now as people have seen the threat move, or apparently the threat move? And all we need now is, of course, you've got to do an iodine product for the great nuclear fallout. But anyway, that's another
crikey. Fingers crossed we don't need to.
sorry. I'm not making light of it, by the way. Just get your iodine in. But, you know, but anyway, have you seen the demand slack off or not?
Nothing discernible. I mean, certainly there was that kind of a massive, I think, you know, any listener who is familiar with other manufacturers, for instance, I think most manufacturers noticed a massive increase in demand for certain things at the very, very start, but it's kind of regulated now and we're kind of back to the new normal,
just like they said. Yeah, absolutely. But actually, an interesting thing talking about manufacturing is that you actually do manufacture your own products, don't you?
That's right.
If I've got that right. So, you know, obviously quite a few brands, or some brands anyway, don't manufacture their own product. They have them made by another third party and in effect relabel them. I mean, obviously to their specifications. So it's never you know, it's just, I suppose, better value to have it made by somebody else. And obviously they're overseeing that production. But but there is another element of control if you are doing your own manufacturing, presumably.
Yeah, very much so. And I think you've got it right there, is that whenever it's kind of done in-house, whenever it's done in the facilities of Pharmanor, there tends to be a much greater control over is everything the way that it's intended, rather than, you know, the kind of lag between communications that sometimes can happen. But that isn't something that tends to happen with Pharmanor. So it's quite nice in that way that if there's a change we need to make happen, or if it's something that we've identified, it can be rectified really quickly, you know, and really, really efficiently.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's that sort of, what do you call it? Being able to be responsive to things quickly. If, you know, if you think, well, actually, we could just tweak it and make it work a bit better this way, you know, so interesting stuff. So is there anything else you'd like to say, or you think I've missed out, or?
No, not at all. Well, the major thing that I maybe could talk a little bit more about is just the practitioner kind of care element, because one thing, well, you kind of asked if we noticed any kind of increase in demand for products during the pandemic. One thing we did notice a demand for, and which became very popular, is our webinars. So the webinars are something that I kind of started off with just myself, and a couple of really well-known educators have joined in. So that became quite a popular thing for us. And especially in the pandemic, when everyone had to kind of, you know, stay behind closed doors and weren't really able to get out there and you know, see people in person. So that really developed for us. And now that we're kind of back in the new normal, the seminars are really taking off as well. So that's our kind of physical events. So we kind of have those around the country in different locations. So that's the UK and Northern Ireland. And we are going to release a new topic for May very soon. So I would say if anyone's interested in joining those, it's pharmanor.co.uk/events.
Okay, lovely. Yeah. So is it under wraps of what you'll be talking about then? Or is it just like, are you happy to let us know?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty happy to let you know. Should it be cryptic? No. Chronic pain. Yeah.
Right. So,
and related conditions. So more.
That is such an interesting topic, because of course there's been this great big scandal of these drugs, you know, the opioid crisis in America. And I don't know what happened here. Was it such a big problem here as well? Or the same, or was it not quite as bad as it was there?
Yeah, I mean, crikey, anything in America is usually a bit grander scale, really, isn't it? But yeah, there is certainly a bit of a, I wouldn't say a crisis necessarily, but I suppose someone who works in the kind of musculoskeletal field may know a bit more on that, and they may have experienced it a bit more. But there is certainly an undercurrent of fear with the public when it comes to relying on opioid medication for pain relief, which is really where a lot of nutritional therapists can come in, and reflexologists, osteopaths, etc. Really the alternate therapists that can kind of contribute to that if someone's trying not to kind of rely on pharmacological support. So I mean, that's kind of the principle that we're going for, and there's be a couple of common conditions that we'd see in practice a lot, because the seminars are, this sounds really corny, Kate, but it is true, they're created by practitioners for practitioners. So
I thought of that line first.
maybe you did, and maybe I stole it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of those things, you know, it's where you're just things. Like, yeah, we're all but it's a really worthy thing that actually if you're a practitioner, you know how to speak to other practitioners, and you know, within the network, we can speak quite freely about how we practice, which is a nice, you know, we're like with behind closed walls. So it's quite nice to be able to be free to talk about how we might resolve, you know, people's distress, which is such a worthy thing to be doing. But it takes a practitioner to know how to do that. So that's really good.
So for the seminars, your speaker will be an experienced nutritional therapist, an educator, depending on, you know, actually, no matter where you go, that'll be the case. So certainly check out the events, I think. If anyone's
And it would be nice to do live events again, won't it? So yeah.
That's the thing, getting out and chatting to people.
There is a value to that. And I think it's also, you know, in many ways, doing a webinar and stuff over the Zoom is kind of, it's efficient, you know, it really is efficient and it's really great. You know, we wouldn't have met nearly the people we've met during this whole thing if it hadn't been for this facility to have this Zoom. But you know, it's interesting when you take time out for an event, you've almost had to put your work, you've had to put it aside, you've had to concentrate on that, and you get so much more out of it. I think your brain is obviously attuned to you know, to actually being totally there, as opposed to, you know, when we're on the Zoom, you know, we're sort of, do you know what I mean, oh, it's the next meeting, we've got to get on with something else, and it, you know, you don't sort of take it in so much.
Absolutely. And you tend to learn a few things that you can really take back with you, not necessarily just from the seminar itself, but also other attendees. You know, keep in mind, people that attend our seminars, they come from such a broad spectrum of different practitioner types. That's impossible to leave without learning something very helpful. Everything from herbalists, Chinese, traditional Chinese medicine practitioners, nutritional therapists, nutritionists, we've had the odd GP join us, cardiologists even, pharmacists. You get a lot of different angles that can really help us in the future when dealing with a client.
So would you say actually that sort of acceptance, say, with GPs and pharmacists and the sort of more traditional kind of materialistic material types of medicine, in effect, would you say there's a growing interest there of what else they can do outside pharmacological products?
Good question, and I'm not sure how to answer, because I would hope overall that we're becoming more I would hope all health practitioners of all types are becoming more aware of how nutrition can impact us and how fundamental it is to kind of keep that in mind, no matter what our practice is. But whether or not that's actually transitioning in medical practice overall, I'm unsure. But I have seen some. I've seen and met some wonderful medical practitioners who are really on top of certain protocols.
I really get it, which is lovely to see. Well, Frankie, what else can we say? This is a sort of like introduction, so it's really lovely to meet you properly, and we hope to meet you on the road. So again, for everybody listening, the references were for your website.
The website, first, if you wanted to sign up to the program, which is free, by the way, that's just where you get all of our services all in a kind of neat bundle. It's pharmanor.co.uk/pro. So that would be the first port of call. Slash events for events, slash webinars for webinars. And I think the major one there is the email as well. For any questions, would be pro@pharmanor.co.uk.
Perfect. So PRO at pharmanord.com, did you say, or co.uk?
co.uk.
To co.uk, fantastic. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, any questions or queries, and that's we'll get to that.
Well, we look forward to having you on on the network, and we will talk lots again. And but for the main point, that's it for today, everybody. So thank you so much for listening, and Frankie from Pharmanord, thank you so much for all your wit and wisdom today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you.
That was great, Frankie. That was absolutely fantastic. So thank you. And we'll publish this. But if you want the recording, you know, once we've published it, you can have it for your own purposes. You know, if you want to cut it up and use it in social or whatever, if you can, you know, we're happy to let you have the film.
Hopefully that was fine. I got a bit, it's hard to sometimes get out of the kind of USP.
No, that's fine. I mean, you know, in effect, we are, you know, as you know, with the network, actually, I think we're one of the only, I think it's evolved in this way, which is we're sort of very much on the side of the suppliers, you know, in effect, because we rely on you for the sponsorship, actually nutritionists do like to know about supplements. They do like to know about the benefits of the supplement. I mean, I think where the only thing where it gets into, like, people get like this is if it sounds very salesy, which of course it doesn't, if you're just talking about, you know, it's like, I don't know, buy this because it's so brilliant, which you couldn't say anyway, you know. They don't like that, but it's like, that wasn't salesy at all, I would think, you know, because I'm like, we're terrible nutrition therapists, like, oh my god, I gotta try that omega 7, you know, for my eyes, you know. We only do it for ourselves, this whole thing anyway.
Yeah, you should see my own supplement drawer is crazy.
Absolutely, it's crazy. Mine too. Yeah. I mean, I've sort of expanded into a supplement sort of downstairs, you know, like my kitchen counter is entirely filled with supplements now, you know. But no, brilliant. That was really good, and thank you very much. And we'll get in touch with other things, and you know, obviously in the network it's about putting your hand up to do stuff. That's the major how it works, you know. If you don't put your hand up, it's not going to work. You have to say, oh, we'll do that. So actually, what have we got coming up? Well, we've got the cup of tea with me coming up, which is a new thing, actually, which you might put your hands up. I think Annalie will let you know about that. But it's basically two sides to that cup of tea with me. It's much more Q&A sort of, like, and we're trying to encourage people to give away something, you know, ethical bribe, you know, like, you know, ethical bribe, you know, it's like, you know, just, you know, I don't know, the second person to have signed up gets, you know, a pack of Sparmanord products, you know, free, blah, blah, blah. So it's that kind of thing, but it would be live. So it'll be people, you know, either on the chat asking questions. The second half actually is a sort of new initiative, which is going to be called the Nutrition Network Hub. And it's really about the response, I suppose, to the pandemic, which is nutritional therapists as instrumental in creating new communities, new societies exactly, but it's sort of like looking, how can nutritional therapists, using food, how can we iron out inequalities? What can we do? How can we, you know, we've got a charity involved with that, which is called UK Harvest, which basically uses fresh food which sort of like, it's an environmental charity that uses food that's going to be wasted, and they make food from that, meals, fresh food, which they then distribute to people. And then they also do cooking, and they teach children how to cook within schools as well. So that, we're really excited about that. And it might be people like the ANH, which is the Alliance for Natural Health, is our other charity. They are much more about things like regulatory stuff, which you may be familiar. So they do quite a lot of consultancy in the industry about regulatory issues, for example. But they're very much about, you know, how to protect, you know, in effect, natural health, as opposed to it, you know, going down the path of enforced pharmaceutical solutions. But they are a huge part of our industry of kind of protecting our backs, which is great. So they're a charity, so we'd support these two charities. And it might be sort of getting interesting speakers on, I have no idea who yet, but just to say, okay, well, you know, I don't know, how can we get more equality and, you know, food security and I don't know, even health security, and, you know, how can we start to move the needle? But we'll probably team up with people who will actually do the digging, so to speak, things like the World Council for Health and all of these other bodies, or even the Together movement, which is about it didn't matter if you were vaccinated or unvaccinated. It's about non-mandation of medical intervention, basically. Sure. So we might hook up with them, and I haven't really thought it through yet.
It sounds great, actually. I'd say the first half of that, the cup of tea, I mean, that sounds great.
The cup of tea with me is, you know, it's basically what we're sort of hoping to do is create, or not a separate community, but within the network, is to say, look, some people are going to be obviously interested in what you have to say, just nutrition, you know, that's it. And the other half might be tempted in because of the second sort of social half, you know, to say, okay, what can we do now? You know, let's not just sit on our hands and just, you know, what can we actually really do to make a difference? So there you go. That's the idea. So you'll see that coming through. And, you know, that's the sort of thing where you go, no, we'll do that. We'll do that. You know, I think the first one's the 29th. We're having the ANH on that one, the Alliance for Natural Health. They are a bit controversial. So, you know, just to be warned, you know, they will certainly, Robert Verkerk will definitely probably talk about the V word. We have to be a bit careful because we don't want to be taken down. So we don't mention it, but he might. So, you know, but you know, there you go. That's, we are in a democracy. So, well, apparently we are. So there you go.
So say the rumors,
so the rumor goes. Yeah, absolutely.
No, well, thank you so much for today, by the way. I mean, it was really nice. And it was, nice seems like a bit of an understatement. It was excellent. It was great to be able to have a chat.
Great. You were easygoing, and you know, and it flowed, and an hour went like that. You know, it was amazing.
So,
Yeah. So, thank you. Very good. And we've got that in the can, so I can see it's still recording, which is always good. Otherwise, you've done all of that. It's like, you're not recording. Yeah. So, no, it's all good. Thank you.
Yeah, best go before I say something you can blackmail me with.
Yeah, exactly. No, we'll cut this bit off. Don't you worry. No, absolutely.
No, of course, I understand. Brilliant. Well, I'll have a look out in my emails for anything from Annalie regarding potential activities. We're always on the, our major goal, I would say, right now is to promote awareness of our events.
Yes, well, that's another thing actually we've got coming up, which is the box scheme, there will be a box scheme going out in sort of April, May. So you could just do a, you know, I don't know, you'd have to speak to Annalie. I'll get onto that sooner rather than later and say, you know, because what you could do is a leaflet, but it's always good if you've got some product to give away, frankly, as well. But you could do that. So that's free for you to go into that box. It's, you know, as you know, that's worth 500 quid on its own. So, you know, actually, so you could just put a leaflet in with a sample and say, come and see us. Yeah, definitely.
Sounds great. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll make a note with Annalie. Great.
Yes. Cool. And one more thing is the social media side, obviously the Facebook. And so, you know, let Annalie know, or just, you know, just, you, and I don't think she's got objection with saying, well, by the way, we've got a seminar on blah, but also with the newsletter. And I know this is probably giving you too much here, but the newsletter is somewhere where we would put details of seminar and all of that sort of thing. So there's lots of different ways you can access to let people know about that.
I mean, by tomorrow, what day? We're on Wednesday, aren't we? Are we Wednesday?
We're Wednesday.
God, crikey. Hopefully by the end of the week we'll have an actual advertisement created for where that's relevant, but we'll also have copy and imagery if we just want to kind of make a more organic post.
I mean, we won't probably in any case for the box scheme, that's not a massive rush because she's got to organize that, and you know, and just get in touch with her and she can help you understand how you can, you know, use various different modalities to sort of promote that.
Sounds great. Sounds wonderful.
Okay,
I won't keep you any longer, Kate.
Thank you so much. All right, go well, and have a good rest of the afternoon.
Absolutely.
Go well. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.